Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, accepting nominations now for the 2020 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards at irvine.org. The California Endowment. Health happens when Californians value schools more than prisons. Learn more at calendow.org. And by the California Healthcare Foundation, featuring Listening to Mothers in California, a new survey with insights into maternity care in the Golden State, on the web at chcf.org.
Right now, I am lathering up some oxtail smothered in gravy. It's one of our daily requested items that we have for the day.
Today on Valley Edition, we're taking you to Fresno's Chinatown.
We're out here live in full effect at Chef Paul's Cafe, F and Tulare Street, Chinatown, downtown, you feel me? Yurt.
And we're starting at Chef Paul's Cafe. I'm Alice Daniel.
And I'm making some grits for our shipping grits. I am going to add some cheese, so I would like to get by you real quick.
And that's Eddie Wu-Tangzi. He's young, with lime green hair, braces, and a red tie-dyed t-shirt. A row of customers sit on stools at the tile counter and watch him cook.
We're full, but generally there's a line of people waiting to get in here.
And that's Chef Paul Pearson. People come from all over the state to taste his recipes. But the cafe is only open because of a wager.
Originally, we leased this spot just to do catering. And someone came in and asked, when are you going to open your restaurant? Says, we have no intentions of opening this up as a restaurant. We're just going to use it to cater out of. And the gentleman said, well, that's smart because, you know, nobody can make a restaurant work down here. And I said, if they did certain things, I said, they could make it work. And he says, I'll bet you $1,000 you can't make it work down here. And I said, okay, we open in 2 weeks.
And you have family working with you other than your wife, Pinky, right?
Oh, yes. My daughter, Monique, and I have my nieces and my grandchildren on the weekend.
And what does it mean to operate a restaurant in Chinatown?
Well, one of the things we tried to do when we opened this restaurant is to kind of take people out of the environment out there when they walk in, because, you know, sometimes it can be pretty tough. But we're very fortunate that a lot of the homeless individuals and things like that, they're very good to me. You know, they'll tell people, no, you can't do this over there in front of Paul's. You can't do this. You can't do that. Because when they come to me, you know, they come and say, Paul, can I borrow $20? Well, no big deal.
So tell me about your own culinary history.
Well, you know, I was fortunate enough. I started here in the Valley with Al Pardini. He was my mentor and still today he's no longer with us, but he's still my mentor. I think about a lot of things I get ready to do. I think about him and say, okay, how should I handle this? And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be the chef at many, many, many different restaurants here in town.
And I've also heard that you've cooked for famous people like Elvis Presley and...
We cooked for Elvis Presley back in the 70s. We had George H. Bush, Ronald Reagan when he was governor of California, Jimmy Carter, President Ford. But to me, there's nothing like cooking for your customers in this restaurant.
I order a catfish plate, maybe some chitlins on the side.
I'm Monica Velez, and I'm also here at Chef Paul's, and I'm standing right next to Rick Brown.
Yam and stuff like that. They got everything you want to eat, cabbage, cornbread.
That looks really juicy.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to drop nothing.
Brown says he's been coming here since Chef Paul's opened 5 years ago.
Want to taste it?
Oh, no, it's okay. You enjoy your lunch.
Oh, it's good. It's bomb. It's real good.
Debbie Simpson is sitting across from her husband eating some fried chicken.
It's crispy. It's spicy. It's tender. The green beans are cooked really good. The cornbread's great. It's just all good.
Simpson and her husband come here almost weekly.
The fried green tomatoes and the fried okra, the best. So those are really, if they're having them on a special that day, you should really get those.
She likes the vibe here.
You see everybody from all walks of life, and that's great. And, you know, it's just everybody's friendly. And obviously the volume's up. People are having fun and joking around. And it's just a nice atmosphere.
Jonah Price was just driving through Fresno from Oakland. His friend recommended Chef Paul's. Price says he tried the fried chicken and waffles.
It felt like a home meal. I have family in Mississippi. It felt like I went back and just they made a meal for me. So it was really good. really comforting.
Chef Paul's is brimming with a lunch crowd. There's a funky mural on the wall of jazz musicians playing at a bar. And the clientele is really diverse. There are suits and hipsters and everyone in between. When you walk out, it feels like you're leaving an urban hotspot. But shut the door behind you, and you're back. To a part of downtown that sometimes feels abandoned. And some of it has been, thanks to high-speed rail. But a new partnership may help revitalize the neighborhood. FM89's Carrie Klein brings us this story, starting with a memory of a Chinatown restaurant.
Ofelia Heme used to run Ofelia's Cocina, a Mexican restaurant on Kern Street. Her specialty? Chile rellenos, stuffed peppers.
Every other place, they have chile rellenos in the Mexican restaurants, but ours were different. They were served like in some kind of juicy sauce, and it was really, really, really good.
In 2017, it was one of three businesses Heme owned in Chinatown. But today, only one is left. A barbershop she runs with her two sons. In 2018, she closed the restaurant and a men's clothing store she had owned for 14 years.
It still hurts. If you ask me, I can cry right now. I didn't want to go.
So why did she? High-speed rail development. This neighborhood, settled in the late 1800s by workers building the railroad, is now being chewed up to make way for high-speed rail. Right now, three streets are completely blocked, overgrown, and fenced off.
Closing the streets, it just stopped a lot of business. I mean, the traffic, it cannot go through, you know, and a lot of detours and stuff like that. People get lost, get mad.
Like many of her clients from a retirement home downtown who had negotiated those streets in wheelchairs and walkers.
We could tie those in purple. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Down the street, Rosie Torres of Rosie's Flower Shop is also skeptical of high-speed rail.
If they complete what they're going to do, great, you know, but I don't see any benefit to it right now, and I don't see any benefit from it coming, but we'll see.
That disillusionment is shared by a lot of folks in Chinatown.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too. I'm sorry.
Kathy Omachi had high hopes when the plans were announced years ago.
My first response was, oh, that's going to be interesting. Hopefully they talk with the community. Hopefully they talk with property owners and business owners. And I'm still hoping. This is like 5-6 years into it.
To Omachi, Chinatown is family. She now lives in Reedley, but her father was born in China Alley. Her grandparents migrated here from Hiroshima in the late 1800s, along with some 11 other diaspora who at one point settled here.
African American, Armenian, Basque, Chinese, Japanese, Italian, Portuguese, Mexican Americans, Germans from Volga, Russia, Greek and Filipino communities all called Fresno Chinatown home from about the mid to later 1800s.
Omachi runs Chinatown Revitalization Incorporated, an organization that documents Chinatown's history. She holds court in what she calls a little hands-on museum on F Street with relics of Chinatown's past, a travel chest from Japan, tools from an herb shop, and props from a Chinese opera that performed here in the 1920s. At other times, Omachi's below ground.
Are we gathering everybody? So, any questions so far?
A YouTube video shows her leading a tour through Chinatown's underground tunnels.
And the tunnels, when people talk about them, what I talk about are connectors that would you could take things across the street or down the alleys, which made perfect sense, and we'll talk about that as we go.
They used to link basements and businesses to gambling halls and brothels. There's a tension in Chinatown between preservation and rejuvenation, but high-speed rail construction is changing the neighborhood faster than any locals thought, and on someone else's terms. Some of that is to make way for the Fresno High-Speed Rail Station, slated to be built on the edges of this neighborhood. Some streets closed now will never reopen, while others will become underpasses. Now that Governor Newsom put the brakes on the rail's statewide plans in January, some want construction to stop now. Others want the rail to be finished, or else their sacrifices will have been for nothing. Morgan Doazaki falls somewhere in between.
I'm still excited about it coming because it's going to be in Chinatown and it's going to be great for the area, but even Newsom says 2027, and that's a long time to wait if you're struggling right now.
Doizaki owns Central Fish, a Japanese market and restaurant at Kern and G Streets. When he looks out the front door at the weedy field that used to be a thoroughfare from downtown, he sees Fresno's dark past.
It seems like where there was the red line districts before in Fresno. They just put that fence where the red line used to be, so basically they're redlining again, and they're discriminating against the homeless in Chinatown.
At the same time, though, he's part of a turning point. He's now the board chair for the Chinatown Fresno Foundation, which has brought in around $250,000 to unify and revive the neighborhood. And it appears to be helping them negotiate with the state. Here's Diana Gomez, High Speed Rail's Central California Regional Director, speaking at a meeting in Chinatown last Tuesday.
So I've been working with the new partnership, with the downtown, the Chinatown partnership, to try to figure out how we can funnel additional dollars for recruiting, for advertising, redoing our signs.
Gomez tells me those additional dollars could total as much as $50,000. She says, yeah, the new foundation is giving the neighborhood a coordinated voice. Morgan Doizaki agrees.
Getting the community together in Chinatown has been a challenge, but it's also so beautiful the way it is, how much momentum it has, that people will start getting much, much more involved.
Then, maybe someday, Ofelia Jaime can reopen her Mexican restaurant on Kern Street and start serving chile rellenos again. And now we're going to head west a few blocks on Kern Street to a three-story, century-old Buddhist temple. It was built by first-generation Japanese immigrants, the Issei, mostly field workers who made very little money but still managed to fund the elaborate temple. But in 2011, after much soul-searching, the congregation moved to North Fresno and put the historic property up for sale. It finally sold last year. Alice Daniel has the story of who's moving in.
There are signs the temple is coming to life again. A newly erected metal fence around the property, a few cars in the parking lot, and inside the third-story ordination hall, voices. Four women sit on cushions in the middle of the large room. Antique pendant lights hang from a ceiling with intricate woodwork. Large windows let in lots of light. The women face two Burmese monks in brown robes and recite the five precepts of Buddhism. No drinking or drugs, no lying, no adultery, and...
You are not going to be stealing anything. You're not going to kill anyone.
That's Tane Lin. He's part of Fresno's small Burmese American community.
This is where all the Burmese people come and meditate. Not only necessarily Burmese people, not necessarily Buddhist people. Anyone who is willing to come and meditate here, they can join us. We're welcome to do that here.
Lynn's a doctor. It's kind of a theme here. The four women who are meditating, they're retired doctors. And Lynn and several other physicians raised the $750,000 to purchase the landmark temple last summer. It's now called Marak U Dama. The goal is to make it a monastery and a meditation center. At the front of the hall is a colorful shrine with a large Buddha. It's hand-carved, covered in gold leaf. It was recently shipped from Burma, or what's now called Myanmar. There's a smaller Buddha to the left.
So when we bought this property, we found this statue in this storeroom. Oh, I was so excited.
It turns out a mayor from a small Burmese town presented this Buddha to the city of Fresno in 1961. The city then gave it to the temple, where it was stored after the Japanese-American congregation left.
Hey, can you give it to me? Can we save it?
They agreed the Burmese Buddha belonged here. Plus, they were thrilled the new buyers were Buddhist.
Amazing. This is from Burma since like 50 years ago.
Does it make you feel like, oh, we do need to be here?
Yes, very. Yeah, we meant to be here, I think. Yeah.
There are even two monks who traveled all the way from Myanmar to reside here temporarily.
People call my name very short, like Pinya, but Pinya Lengara is a full name.
Pinya Langura has been here for about 6 months. He says young people like him are curious about how many different ethnic groups there are in the U.S.
And also learn how the different people live together.
And closer afield, Burmese Americans from L.A. and San Francisco have also come to help fix up the property. Fresno local Ken Ng has rebuilt cabinet doors inside. And outside, he points to some of his carpentry work.
This door, see the wood door?
Yes.
I replaced.
Ng's not a doctor, but he's married to one. I ask him to spell his last name, Ng, and he confuses me when he says, nice guy.
Nice guy?
No, okay.
Yeah, just the N and G, so the people, they're asking me how to spell it. You know nice guy? That's a N and G, that's it.
Nice guy, funny guy. We walk through the building that's behind the temple, a large fellowship hall with a kitchen. There's 5 decades of memories here, weddings, festivals. And back up a few steps through a door going outside to a large tree with heart-shaped leaves.
Okay, Raymond, do you want to talk about the trees?
Yeah.
That's Raymond Coe. He's not a medical doctor.
I'm a dentist.
Yeah. But he's married to one.
Where's my script?
He doesn't really need a script.
It's a banyan tree. It's family of a fig tree, okay? And this is a sacred tree for us because Buddha was enlightened under this tree.
Well, not this particular tree.
How? Because when the real tree died in the Buddha in India, it was cloned. One clone was sent to Ceylon. And that clone, we got this clone from Ceylon to here, so it's kind of related.
I asked him how that happened. How did the temple get a seedling from a Bodhi tree in what is now Sri Lanka?
I don't know. The Japanese did it, not me.
Yeah, that's come with the property.
That's come with the property.
It comes with the property, along with the goodwill of the Japanese American congregation who built and cared for this unique temple for decades. Now it's in the hands of newer immigrants who will tell their own stories while tending to the Bodhi tree. When it comes to fulfilling the needs of a neighborhood, spiritual peace can be important, but so is sustenance. That's where Central Fish comes in. The grocery store has been in the community since 1950, carrying the usual kitchen staples one might expect. But this postcard from Laura Satsui reminds us that it does have some unexpected treasures.
Some of the what?
That's like the one on the end.
The taro root?
Taro root.
What do we need that for?
Kind of cook it, let's show you and stuff.
That's my grandma, Satoko Satsui. We're going through the store, finding ingredients to make sukiyaki. It's sort of like a Japanese stir fry, flavored with sugar and shoyu, which is soy sauce. Chinatown used to have a large Japanese American community that worked and lived in the area. Today, that population has dwindled.
Well, you know, it has changed a lot because before there were so many Japanese that would come here all the time. I knew all the mothers and whatever. But now, you know, everybody's in their 90s and whatever. They're not around anymore.
That's Stan Zenimura. He's one of the butchers here and has worked at the store on and off for the last 35 years. I can see Zenimura's observations in my own family. Some of my relatives used to come to Central Fish once a week, but a lot of them have since passed away, and those remaining find the drive inconvenient.
I mean, we used to go through maybe 1,400 pounds of just snapper filet a week, huh? And now if we go through 300, we're lucky.
But the store is still known for its fish.
So what's the order now?
Half a pound of tuna, half a pound of yellowtail.
Okay.
We're also shopping with my dad, Larry Satsui. By the time we're ready to pay, our basket is comprised of a variety of fish, green teas, and daikon, which is horseradish, napa cabbage, taro root, and konnyaku, which is a yam that actually looks like noodles made of jello. We go home, and I take videos of my grandma slicing the tuna and yellowtail we bought. I want to remember her way of doing it, arguably the right way. I make mental notes of how the food tastes, because she doesn't use measurements, but she does use lots of shoyu and lots of sugar. While I doubt I'll ever recreate this meal exactly, at least I know where to start, and I'm reassured that Central Fish, this store that also functions as a cultural confluence, is where I'll find the same ingredients my grandparents bought years ago. By now, we've heard the refrain that Chinatown has changed. It's not the same as it used to be. But what was it like for someone who grew up here during busier times? 57-year-old Henry Okazaki tells us about his Chinatown.
We're standing in front of the Central Fish Company, G Street and Kern Street. I remember it as being a more busier location, busier place, a lot more people. My parents frequently shopped at Central Fish Market and also the local stores, like across the street, across Kern Street, there's Komodo's department store. And it was basically a department store. It was fully equipped with all kinds of gifts and things. And downstairs was a fully stocked toy store, basically. That was my favorite spot. And on the second floor of Komodo's department store was a hotel called, I think it was called Asia Hotel. And it was run by the Maseba family. And my dad was good friends with Mr. Maseba while it was being run by them. Also, right across the alley from was a hardware store, Aki Hardware. And that was fully stocked with all kinds of hardware-related type stuff, you know, plumbing, electrical.
So these are all, you know, like family-owned, and, you know, Central Fish is like a Japanese market grocery store. Komodo, as you mentioned, had things like Japanese gifts and stuff like that. So really serving the Japanese community that lived here at the time, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so now, I guess, out of those three places, I mean, Komodo's and the upstairs hotel, Aki's Hardware Store, and Central Fish, like, which ones are left standing?
Basically, the Central Fish Company is the only one. Komodo's, some other people took over. They left a sign.
Right, you can see it says Komodo's Department Store, but it looks old and just kind of like tired, like needs some paint.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it's kind of a reminder of how things were in the past. And yeah, there was a sign for the Asia Hotel too, but that's no longer there. Yeah.
I mean, right now we're out here, it's like pretty empty. I mean, part of me is thinking, oh, it's midday, like people are at work and stuff. But I don't know, from your memory, like even sort of during the week, was it busier? Were there more people out and about at the time?
When my parents brought here, it was always busy. There was a lot more people, a lot more traffic. It just seems like because my dad, he basically was a minister, and he knew a lot of the people here.
So he was a community figure pretty much.
Yes, I think so. He was, yeah. Like down here, where this is Ophelia and Sons Barbershop, it was a Japanese-run barbershop. I think it was called Tax Barbershop. And my dad frequently came down here with me to get haircuts. So I remember that as a child.
How does it make you feel now, like walking around here, seeing these, you know, formerly open but now closed department store, you know, changed hand shops, and it just seems quite a bit different, but for you, like, what do you feel about that?
Well, I kind of feel a sense of sadness, melancholiness, to an extent where, you know, I kind of miss that kind of interaction, I believe. I feel that, you know, my heritage as a Japanese, right, I guess plays a role in how I feel. You know, I would have liked to seen that kept going if possible, but with I guess changing economic times, people, you know, move on, they move away, and the neighborhoods, including Chinatown, change. Maybe another example would be where I live, or where I grew up, Kern and A Street. That was an area of town that was lived by, you know, a lot of Japanese Americans, and they gotten older, and their kids grew up and moved away, and now there's a different type of makeup now.
Yeah. Do your parents still live over there?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Did you also grow up and move away though?
Yeah, sure did. Yeah, so I'm no different. So, but I still live in town, and I come down here like basically because my parents still live here, and I try to frequent the shops here as well.
I wonder, like, being that there was, you know, a pretty close-knit community of like Japanese Americans and that lived here and that serviced all these, that went to all these stores. Was Central Fish kind of just the key grocery store for you growing up, since it was right here? It was just kind of like your community, go there, and would you also run into people? Is that kind of how it was?
I think so, yeah. This is the Central Fish Company, I guess, stands out most because it was the longest lasting business you might say, because there's other businesses here, other markets and other fish markets that also moved on, but they eventually closed as well. Like just down the street on F Street, there was, I think it was called Fresno Fish, and they moved up north, like toward Manchester Center, but eventually closed. And I think there was also, I remember a movie theater right next to the fish market there, and that was open for a long time, then it probably closed too.
And I know you have kids. What do they think of Chinatown, having not grown up here, but, you know, coming here to visit their grandparents, going shopping with you?
I think their perception of what they're exposed to is much different from my exposure. Growing up close to Chinatown, right, I had more of an opportunity to come down here. My kids, since I live uptown in the Fresno area, they only come down here to see their grandparents. Also, try to take them over here to the barbershop, the Ophelia and Sons barbershop. And I think we have a relationship with them, which kind of keeps me bringing down here. And at the same time, they like coming down here because I buy them candy.
At Central Fish?
At Central Fish, right.
That was Henry Okazaki, who grew up in Fresno's Chinatown. You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Laura Satsui.
And I'm Carrie Klein. Our next stop is Kogetsudo, a Japanese shop with a long history over on F Street.
My name is Lynn Yada, and I'm the owner of Kogetsudo.
She tells us she's the third generation to run this shop after her grandparents migrated to Chinatown from Hiroshima.
My grandparents started in 1915, and that's a photograph of them on the wall right there. That picture was taken in 1920. They had two sons, Roy, who's the little boy in there, and then my dad, Moss.
Today, Ikeda Yada runs Kogetsudo almost single-handedly, with a little help from her daughter. She sells ice cream and gifts.
But the star of the show is a display case full of sweets, traditional Japanese pastries called manju and mochi in pink, green, white, and purple, all individually wrapped in plastic wrap on little wooden shelves.
This one has lima beans, red bean smooth. This one is the whole beans with soybean powder on the outside called kinako. There's cinnamon, apple, peach, apricot, cherry, blueberry, raspberry, and boysenberry.
They're like sweet little dumplings, only instead of bread or pasta, the sugary fillings are wrapped in a sticky dough made of rice. She sells mochi ice cream, too.
Right now, I just have vanilla and strawberry.
For authentic mochi, Kogetsudo is the only place between the Bay Area and Southern California. I even have memories of my dad loading up an ice chest full of mochi ice cream before driving to Los Angeles to visit family.
Ikeda Yada says the best part of making mochi is people's reactions when they take that first bite. But ask her what her favorite flavor is, and she can't come up with one.
I don't eat it.
How come?
I guess because you see it every day, you just don't crave for it.
But Carrie and I came hungry.
Which one do you want?
I don't know.
They all look so good.
I know. If I'm going on looks alone, I want to try that one.
The lima bean,
yeah.
And I'll try the red bean smooth. Okay, here goes. It's really squishy. It's a very satisfying feeling, and I haven't even gotten to eating it yet.
So good. It's like so smooth. It's like eating a marshmallow, but without the sugar rush, or like cotton candy.
So like cotton candy, but made out of rice and beans.
Which is why I'm like, oh, is this healthy? Can I eat five?
Ikeda Yada advises us not to. They do have a lot of sugar. Sorry, Laura.
This shop has survived the Depression, the Recession, and even Japanese internment during World War II. Ikeda Yada says a Chinese family kept watch here while her parents and grandparents were sent to concentration camps in Arkansas.
If it ever came down to it, would you ever move the shop?
No, not really, because people know where I'm at. And this is where it all started.
We see why people come back. We also leave with a couple boxes of mochi to share.
And now, we're going to hear from Lee Herrick. He's the former Fresno Poet Laureate, and he's reading his poem, My California, where he highlights the many cultures that are now at home in Chinatown and the rest of the state.
Here, an olive votive keeps the sunset lit. The Korean 20-somethings talk about hyphens, graduate school, and good pot. A group of four at a windowed table in Carpinteria discussed the quality of wines in Napa Valley versus Lodi. Here, in my California, the streets remember the Chicano poet whose songs still bank off Fresno's beer-soaked gutters and almond trees in partial blossom. Here, in my California, we fish out long noodles from the pho with such accuracy, you'd know we'd done this before. In Fresno, the bullets tire of themselves and begin to pray 5 times a day. In Fresno, we hope for less of the police state and more of a state of grace. In my California, you can watch the sun go down like in your California, on the ledge of the pregnant 22nd century, the one with a bounty of peaches and grapes, red onions and the good salsa, wine and japchae. Here, in my California, paperbacks are free. Farmers' markets are 24 hours a day and always packed. The trees and water have no nails in them. The priests eat well. The homeless eat well. Here, in my California, everywhere is Chinatown. Everywhere is K-Town. Everywhere is Armenia Town. Everywhere a little Italy. Less Confederacy. No internment in the valley. Better history texts for the juniors. In my California, free sounds and free touch. Free questions, free answers. Free songs from parents and poets, those hopeful bodies of light.
And now we're going to leave Chinatown and take you back to the studio. We'll hear from three people invested in the Transformative Climate Communities Plan. It's a revitalization effort that affects a huge chunk of southwest Fresno, including the area where we've been today. Here's moderator Kathleen Schock.
Joining us today is Jan Manami, Executive Director of the Chinatown Fresno Foundation, Dr. Carol Goldsmith, President of Fresno City College, and H. Spies, Director of Strategic Initiatives for the City of Fresno. Thank you all for being with us.
Great to be here.
So, H., I'd like to start with you. So, November of 2016, Fresno was selected as one of three cities in California to pilot the Transformative Climate Communities Program, which is an effort designed to fund the development of plans that reduce greenhouse emissions while providing economic, environmental, and health benefits to disadvantaged communities. And this is a grant that is going to bring $70 million to South Fresno. Is that right?
Yes, 66.5 actually.
Okay.
Yep.
So take us briefly through this process, starting in 2016. How did we get to where we are today?
So good news, bad news, good news. The good news is that we got $65.5 million. It's actually half of all of the TCC, or Transformative Climate Communities, dollars in the state for this brand new program. We got half, and then the other half was split between Ontario and Watts. The bad news is that the reason that we got that money is that we have the worst demographic information in the state in terms of poverty, in terms of environmental impact, in terms of health, negative health outcomes, and that's primarily in the zip codes that they use a thing called the CalEnviro screen to determine that looks at all these indicators and merges them. But it's also the fact that we, through various administrations, especially with Ashley Swearingen and with Lee Brand, we have had incredible advocacy with the state saying that, you know what, Fresno's ready for a turnaround, and what you need to do is help us make a down payment on that. And that's what this is. So the great news is that there was a an incredible, contentious, beautiful community process that resulted in the choice of 24 projects, and that the opportunity, Kathleen, is to create a durable community development conduit, a pipeline where other resources can be layered in over the next decades that connects downtown Chinatown and Southwest and takes the weakest spoke of our city and turns it into strength.
That's great. So, Jan, you were involved in this process from the very beginning. Yes. And have a history of working in revitalization mm-hmm. projects throughout the Valley. How unique was the process for this particular grant?
I've never seen anything like it. It was intended to be driven by the citizens, and it absolutely was driven by the citizens. And with all the debate and all the questions and all the loud meetings and everything that happened, we ended up with a vote on the final group of projects, 125-1.
Wow.
So there was consensus in the community to move ahead the way that we chose to move ahead.
So speaking of which, let's talk about the projects themselves and what is going to be funded. One of the largest projects as part of this project is the creation of a Fresno City College satellite campus in West Fresno. Dr. Goldsmith, we know that residents in West Fresno have been lobbying for getting a community college presence there for years. Can you speak to why this project is so vital?
This project is vital. H kind of touched upon it. You know, this is an area of Fresno that has been historically forgotten, and yet there's promise. I have thousands of students that come from Southwest Fresno, and it's important that they have not only a new college, but an ability to have greater access, because now many of them have to drive across town, come to class, and it's time that Southwest has their own higher ed institution there for everyone, and not only for the residents in that area, but for the entire valley. We're very excited. You know, we've been serving Fresno for over 100 years. Now it's time for us to serve all of Fresno. So this is a big part of our Measure C initiative, and so we were elated when the opportunity came to be able to leverage the funds that our voters have already voted on and said Measure C in West Fresno matters. So we were able to take what was originally slated to be a $10 million project and be able to repackage and reprioritize our existing Measure C funding projects, move them onto this campus. And with the help of TCC funding, we're now at $87 million. This is a huge investment into the city.
So it may be too early to talk about specifics, but what can the residents of West Fresno expect to see?
It's never too early to talk about expectations. Well, our plans, we've had numerous committee meetings on campus, in the community of West Fresno, and even in Southeast, because we want to get all the voices from students, faculty, and our community members. So we have a good idea of our programming. We've already revealed our schematic plans. We know that we'll be going to DSA later this year, and we're hoping to start turning dirt in 2020 and opening in 2022. We will have an academic center of over 30,000 square feet and an brand new high-tech automotive advanced technology center of close to 80,000 square feet. So these are high-paying jobs that we want to make sure our residents have access to, but we also will have academic programs that will transfer to any CSU and UC. So we're really excited about our associate degree programs that we'll be offering in West Fresno.
A really nice mix of technical education as well as
absolutely
building that pipeline. That's wonderful. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Jan, let's switch gears to Chinatown. There's a huge amount of change we could expect to see there. Talk us through.
There are three TCC-related projects, and actually our organization was founded based on the citizen involvement in TCC, because we got together and talked to be sure that Chinatown was well represented in the projects, and out of that came the formation of our foundation. So it's a pretty important catalyst in a lot of ways for Chinatown. We have a 57 unit mixed-use housing development that's going in. They're on about the same schedule as the Community College Center to be ready by 2022. Late 2021. We have a streets project that will update, add trees, add amenities on the sidewalks, make Chinatown a much more interesting place along primarily along the major streets, and activate the alleys where they will do water permeable finishes on the alleys. And so there's a number of buildings in Chinatown that actually have alley addresses. So we'll be able to... rather than street, they face the alley.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty interesting. It's an interesting old neighborhood, and we're looking to really see it develop quickly.
So whenever we talk about revitalization, many people hear gentrification, and particularly in light of a project this big in scope with a pretty tight deadline. What steps has the city taken to address those concerns?
We have established a displacement avoidance task force, actually, to address potential displacement in downtown and the TCC area, but a little larger than the TCC area, because we realize, especially in California, displacement, gentrification is a huge challenge. Now, that being said, the first report that's in draft form right now for that displacement avoidance task force indicates that there's absolutely no displacement right now. And that's another good news, bad news thing, right? There's no displacement because some of these areas have been so underdeveloped that it's going to take some time for instance, the City College campus is basically bare ground. And but also there's a lot of infill land available. Chinatown has just been I am so moved by the heroism of the businesses that are in Chinatown, because they are now under siege by high-speed rail, which has cut off main arteries coming into them. But the positive outlook is that with the investment of TCC dollars and the build-out of high-speed rail, that all that opens up and we have flourishing going on. All that to say that we're really concerned, the state and the city and our citizens are concerned about displacement. What we want is revitalization without relocation. We want to create spaces for people who have been historic residents in these neighborhoods to be able to stay there. And there are creative ways to do that. The project that Jan mentioned, the 57-unit project, is workforce affordable, so that folks that are now in that community can afford to live there. And there will be other projects like that.
That's great. So, Jan, I'm glad you brought up, or actually, H, I'm glad that you brought up high-speed rail. Jan, I'm curious what your thoughts are about the changes that we've seen in the scope of the project. Now that high-speed rail will run from Bakersfield to Merced, are you concerned that that will in any way stymie the impact that it could have in Chinatown?
The impact of high-speed rail we're feeling right now, H touched on it briefly, all the roads into Chinatown are blocked. Some of them will be permanently blocked. You can get into Chinatown from the outside, from the edges, but our businesses are facing those challenges right now. If there is actually, when it develops, and again, we're talking 8, 10, 12 years down the road, it will bring people, even if the final decision is just going Bakersfield to Merced, there will be people coming to Fresno. And Chinatown merchants who are there now, we expect to stay, and we expect to fill the vacancies and be ready for the people in Fresno now, but certainly ready for whoever might come from the train, no matter how long it is.
And how are businesses holding up?
They are very resilient. Chinatown has seen conscious disinvestment forever. I mean, it was founded on segregation. And there were 11 communities that were forced to live there, and they made it into a very vibrant neighborhood for years. And we expect to bring that back.
Great. Well, you're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. We're here talking about Transform Fresno, a state grant that will inject nearly $70 million into Southwest Fresno, downtown, and Chinatown.
Well, 65.5 plus $100 million additional in match. And so, for instance, Dr. Goldsmith, through the community college, is bringing another 71 million dollars to the table. It's about a $180 million project total.
So I'm glad you brought up the matching funds. Where are those dollars coming from?
Well, some come from the project that a large portion of them comes from the State Center Community College District and Fresno City College and the build out of the campus. But the Housing Authority is doing in Chinatown brings additional matching dollars. The city's putting in millions of dollars, everything from an increased fax or a bus connector to a park that's going to be right adjacent to the community college campus, and it's going to help the development of a residential area. So all the funds come from a lot of different areas.
So I'd like to switch gears a little bit and get back to the campus in Southwest Fresno. For years, the community has been calling for a college in that region. I would love to hear your thoughts about why State Center Community College District chose this path of starting with the satellite campus, and what that actually tangibly means for the community.
Sure. And I think when people talk about wanting to have a college, they're talking about wanting to have access to community college. And I think it's really important for your listeners to note, because we've listened, we are now in Southwest and Southeast in preparation for our sites to come on board. So we're partnering with Edison High School and using that facility to offer college-level courses now. So we're not waiting until the building is built. And I think that's really important for people to hear. And in terms of building a new college, that is a lengthy, time-consuming endeavor. And they typically start off as centers. And in the state of California right now, there's this movement about moving towards more online. In fact, California's newest community college is an online virtual college. So we know, though, here in the Valley, we want online access, but we also want a physical presence in West Fresno. So that's what we've done. So again, you know, looking at our programs that we're going to be offering, associate degree of transfer, specifically focusing on public justice and social health.
Could you just explain what that is?
What is that, right? Well, social justice and public health are our two newest associate degree for transfer. And associate degree for transfer is a new vehicle for community colleges. That means when a person completes that study, they will be able to have a degree in hand that the CSUs shall take them as a junior. That's different than we've ever done before with your typical AS and Associate Degree of Science and Arts. Typically, if a student had that, the CSU may accept them as a junior. So sometimes, and it happened to me when I was a young student, I didn't have, they saw it as slightly less than. And what's exciting is there's legislation that says if you have an associate degree for transfer, you will go to the CSU as a junior, effectively cutting off 2 years' cost. So it's pretty significant. So social justice is all of the things that's going on today in terms of civil engagement, learning about our cultural history, how do we engage in journalism. It's all of those things that I think our students and our populace is very interested in. And of course, public health, this is a critical area for this particular area and our entire city. So it's talking about how do people become public health practitioners. They're two very viable degrees.
So really targeting the offerings around what is going to be most impactful for the residents of that part of the
city. Absolutely. And we heard, and not only did they want to, our residents and our students and our future students, not only did they want career technical, which we'll have the automotive technology training, looking at how we continue to train for electric vehicles. We'll continue to have that welding, a whole host of career technical education, but we also wanted to focus on the academic areas as well.
Fantastic. So let's talk timeline. I understand the clock is ticking. What deadlines are we looking at here?
We have a 5-year window, and so we anticipate that all the projects will be concluded in 5 years, but we do have a clock ticking, and we're pressing in. The mayor is very committed and ultimately accountable to make sure that these projects get done, and he's very excited because There is a clock ticking, but I think more significantly, there is a ripple effect for these projects. And already we are seeing, and Mayor Brand is a huge champion of leveraging public resources to create private investment. And we're already seeing that. So we're excited about the future of Fresno. This is going to have, although all these resources are channeled in our most vulnerable communities, it's going to have an impact on the whole city.
And there are some projects that we haven't had a chance to mention, bike lanes, parks. Could you just briefly cover some of those?
Yes. Yeah, there are bike lanes. There's infrastructure projects. There's a part of a trail. There's a trail that will be part of a trail system in the city. We have Food Commons is doing a very creative project in terms of agricultural recycling and growing food, making kind of the farm to table piece much more viable out of West Fresno. But I would say big picture, and by the way, there's also a build out of the Mariposa Plaza right down on Fulton Street that will help that to become a more flourishing place and just add fuel to the fire there of development. There's a clean shared mobility project that will include all sorts of electric and non-polluting vehicles available in West Fresno and downtown. But I think the big picture is this connects a revitalization that's going on downtown right now to a revitalization in Chinatown and in Southwest Fresno. And that conduit, that...
Because those two other communities have really not been part of the conversation right. In the same way that downtown has right. dominated headlines with the opening of Fulton Street.
And 70% of these resources are going into West Fresno.
What are you hearing from community members?
Skepticism.
Yeah.
Hope. Excitement. And a constant narrative of disenfranchisement in Southwest Fresno especially that's only going to be overcome with projects like this where behavior changes and where actual development comes up out of the soil and creates transformation.
Jan, I'd like to come back to you. In your time in Chinatown and your time in downtown as well, you mentioned that this was a really unusual project in the sense that the community was so deeply involved in setting the priorities for what was and would not happen. Are you optimistic that this is going to really provide a catalyst for real change?
I do expect it to happen in Chinatown. I don't think this is the only factor that's causing it to happen. Because if you put an infrastructure project in place and nothing accompanies it, it will be simply an infrastructure project and it won't in and of itself create revitalization. But if you put in an infrastructure project and couple that with community engagement, activities that relate to the area and to the improved infrastructure, you add residential, which we're getting in Chinatown again. I mean, there used to be plenty of residents, but that's changed over the years.
And that is so vital to bringing back a community.
It is essential for a mixed-use neighborhood because you have people on the street. And that those eyes on the street, the activity, creates a tremendous amount of revitalization.
Well, thank you so much for being here. This is an exciting time for the city of Fresno, and we are looking forward to see all the improvements that are to come.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show. I'm Alice Daniel.
I'm Carrie Klein.
And I'm Laura Satsui.
Thanks to reporter Monica Velez, engineering and production assistants from Marv Allen and Don Weaver. You can find all this and more on our website, kvpr.org. Download the podcast and our app for smartphones and tablets.
Check us out on Twitter at @KVPR. We're also on Facebook and Instagram.
This has been Valley Edition. A special thanks to everyone in Chinatown who helped us with this show, and thank you for listening.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, accepting nominations now for the 2020 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards at irvine.org. the California Endowment. Health happens when Californians value schools more than prisons. Learn more at calendow.org. And by the California Healthcare Foundation, featuring Listening to Mothers in California, a new survey with insights into maternity care in the Golden State, on the web at chcf.org.